Okay, hello everybody, and welcome to the first session in our autumn 2024 seminar series. The theme, as you know, is on entertainment, and we have as our first speaker we have Rachel Bowen from the council kicking off all the activities that we're paying for and benefiting from. Okay, now our speaker then, as I said, we have Rachel Bowen. The normal thing I do with academics is find out their publications and research interests, and there's a whole list of things there. When you get away from universities, it gets a bit more complicated trying to see what's happening. But for Rachel, she's actually made it very easy. We see that, one, she's a councillor, as you know. She has committee membership, community, culture and sport and economic growth. And clearly it's the culture area that she's speaking about today. But she has appointments to several outside organisations, the Civic and Cultural Master Plan Steering Group, Creative Communities Grant Selection Committee that she chairs, New Zealand Local Government Association, Streets for People Steering Group, Wild-Based Recovery Community Trust, and so on. Now, and her areas of interest, she's very concerned about things like social infrastructure and community and so on, which, as we all know, is a valuable aspect and something that I think we, and you'll find out with the later speakers also, we very richly served here in Palmerston North. I looked also on Facebook, because you do a Google search, and I don't know how she finds time to do anything other than all these things, because about every day there's another activity that she's attended and been involved in. As she works very hard for us. I'm not sure how much she gets paid, but I think we get good value for it. However, now she's going to demonstrate that to herself now, because I'll just leave her to tell us what she's been doing. Thank you.
Is that microphone on?
Yes.
It is, thank you. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Stuart. Tēnā koutou katoa, nā mihi nui kia koutou. Te iwi o rangatāne, tēnā koutou. Ko Rachel Bowen, tōku ingoa. And thank you so much for inviting me to be with you today. Not least because Wednesday is normally a council meeting day, and so I've been able to slide out on official business, thank you very much, to be with you, although I have it on good authority from the Mayor that he expects me back hasto pronto to finish up today's business. But it's a wonderful opportunity, and as Stuart and I were just talking about earlier, fantastic timing to be invited to come and speak to you all today, because as I hope you're all aware, Council is in the middle of consulting on our proposed long-term plan, which is the budget information about all of the things that Council does. So I'm covering a small slice of the things that Council does today, and I really hope that that informs you about the range of activities that Council is responsible for, and maybe challenges you to some questions. Always happy to respond to questions, and we'll have opportunity at the end. And maybe also inspires you to submit to Council's long-term plan. Some of you might be regular submitters. We call you repeat offenders. But some of you might not have submitted. And we are always interested to hear from, well, everybody, but particularly if you've not submitted before and you want to tell us about your concerns or hopes, the things you think we're doing well, please, somebody, or the things that you'd like to see us do differently, more of, less of. So this falls at a really good time for that process, and I'll come back to that at the end to talk about that a little bit. So can I just check that everybody can hear me? Yes, good nodding, well done. I do tend to rattle on, so if I get a bit speedy, just flag me down and I'll slow up a bit, but I just want to make sure that this works for everybody in the room today. So that is not me, just in case any of you wondered if I spend a lot of time at high lookout points pointing inspirationally. No, I don't. It's a visual I took from the council's website of Vaucluse Heights and the walkway up there, but I think it's a different perspective on Palmerston North when you head to some of our very few hills. And maybe that's what I want to give you today, is a bit of a different perspective on the work of Council, on the work of Palmerston North City particularly. Because you might have gathered from my accent that I am not from round these parts originally. I know, it's well masked. 20 years of being in New Zealand and I still sound like I've just flown in from the northeast of England. Because that's how long I've been here now, 20 years. When people say to me, how did you end up in Palmerston North? I say, well, we came on an adventure and never went back. So, yes, so there's a bit of nodding around there. I know there's some other immigrants in the room. I was born and brought up in the northeast of England, on the top of the High Pennines, which is one of the places in the world that makes Palmerston North look not windy at all. Where I grew up, the trees all stand at 45 degrees, and we think that's perfectly normal and a good choice. And I lived there until I went off to university aged 18, when I went to Newcastle-upon-Tyne, which is one of the places in the world which makes Palmerston North seem really balmy and tropical. Because in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, it is a very, very cold wind that lashes in off the North Sea up there. So having studied in Newcastle, I then joined the public sector, a civil servant, as we call them in the UK. And I like to say to people that, you know, I worked for the public sector, and then just kind of draw a veil over that, which generally means people make assumptions about where you worked in the public sector. My children think that I might have been a spy, because I just don't like to talk about it, and I've had to threaten them with physical violence if they make me. But I wasn't a spy, and if I worked for anything glamorous in the public service, I would be saying so, wouldn't I? I'd be like, oh yes, I work for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade. But no, I worked for the Inland Revenue as a tax collector. I know, you're so judgmental and harsh. But I have to say, that was a very good job for me. Probably not the tax collection, because maths has never been my strong suit, but the public sector was a good fit for me, because primarily I believe in the principles of public service, and that's one of the strands in my career that's brought me to being a city councillor now. And that was something that was invested into me through our family, you know, up in those High Pennines. My grandparents had a strong tradition of public service, through parish councils, through their church involvement and those kind of things. So that was a good fit for me, but it also was a good fit for me because I've got a very short attention span. So I'm just warning you about that. And the public service does a marvellous thing where they go, oh, you're quite good at that job. Well done. You should try a different job that you've got no qualification in whatsoever, and we'll just see how it goes. And I've always enjoyed the opportunity of learning about new things, the opportunity to be encouraged to be critical about those things, go, why would you do it that way? That seems really strange. And to question that, to get into the reasoning behind things, and then to be able to work inside a system to make change. And that's something I particularly enjoy about council. Because people often look at me, a bit like Stu did when he looked at my Facebook page, and go, why on earth would you do that? You can't enjoy it. And I thought, absolutely, you can, and I do. One, because I'm really nosy, and council, you get to find out all kinds of fascinating things about what's going on in the city and in our community. But also, on a good day, you get to change the world. And it might not be the whole world, but it could be one person's world, or a community's expression of their world. You get to change things that make a difference in the day-to-day lives of people in our community. And that will always be worthwhile, in my view. So it's a huge pleasure and privilege to serve as your elected representative, whether you knew I was serving at it or not. I am serving as your elected representative, because those are the two parts of the role in City Council. We are elected to represent the diversity of views, you know, some of which are in this room, but you know, across our whole community of 90-odd thousand people, the diversity of views, opinions, thoughts, worldviews that are in that space. We're elected, all 16 of us, to represent that. And then there's the other half of the job, which is that governance role of, it's like being on a jury almost, of saying we've got all the information presented to us, the officer report, the community feedback, the government direction, and then we, the 16 of us, have to make the decisions that we feel are in the best interests of our community. So my public sector background has really helped me with that, in being prepared to get into a topic really deeply, make some recommendations, make some decisions, and then move on to the next topic. And even though I've been in New Zealand for 20 years and have been doing this role for 10, I'm still also a public servant, and I work for WorkSafe, which is the health and safety regulator of New Zealand, as an engagement lead in my spare time. They think I do council in my spare time, but I think council thinks I do WorkSafe in my spare time. And as long as you lot don't talk to each other, it's all good. We'll be fine. So, the other part of that are my responsibilities in council, as Stuart talked about. And primary in that is that I chair our culture and sport committee. I used to just chair, in the last term of council, the committee known as Arts, Culture and Heritage, which was a new committee of council when I was the only person who's ever chaired that, because it was new. And it was something I really wanted us to do as council, because I think there are particular values and importance in that sphere of work that having a committee enabled us to bring life into, to bring focus to. And then that went so well, the mayor said to me at the beginning of this triennium, Rachel, what about you take on sport? And I went, oh, interesting. I'm not known for my ball control. So I don't come from a sports background at all, between you and me, not at all. I mean, I have 3 children, they do sport. I have very poor eyesight and have had since I was 16, so sports are a bit of a mystery to me. But I have learned through being chair of culture and sport to become very enthusiastic, particularly about basketball, FJ. Yes, and I'm now dyed-in-the-wool committed supporter of the Palmerston North Property Brokers Jets, and you can find me there at most home games. But when the mayor said culture and sport, like, that is weird and random. And those two things do not generally go together very well. Sports-type people tend to be, if it was a Venn diagram, sports-type people would be over here. And arts-type people would be over here. There's some nodding going on in my Venn diagram, and I don't know what would be the thing that connects them. And that's the question I went away with when the mayor asked me to do this job, and what would be the bit that makes sense of me holding both of those portfolios? And when I thought about it and did some research, what it comes down to is that arts are recreational, generally. Creative New Zealand, when they talk about participation in the arts, they count not just doing it, being a creator or a creative, but going along to it as participation in the arts. When we attend something, we are participating in the arts. But that might be quite passive recreation. And there's certainly an aspect of that to our sporting endeavours, hence my attendance at the basketball, which is the sport that is most like going to the theatre, in my view. It's indoors, there's music, there's a half time for drinks and chips, and there could be some dancing at some times. And there's often a participatory element where you get to shout abuse at the referee. So that's why I quite like that one. So culture and sport, it brings together the opportunities in our community that are about active and passive recreation. And actually, yeah, COVID's already been mentioned today, but I think what we discovered in COVID is when those opportunities are taken away from us and we're left with what we can access just at home from our computer screens, that's when we see the value, A, of the things that we can access via our computer screens, which tend to be a lot of our creative output, but we also see the value of the things that we do together in community, whether that's, you know, attending a basketball game, going to the theatre, or popping along to sport at, you know, a market of some variety. So, culture and sport, active and passive recreation, which does not at all talk about entertainment, which is the topic that we're going to be exploring over the next few weeks. And I should recognise, in the room today, we have Kate Louise Elliott from Centrepoint Theatre, because she is going to be speaking to you in a later session about theatre, I imagine, how that's actually answered the question, rather than me just waffling on. But entertainment, I looked up in the dictionary just to make sure I was right on this. Should council provide it? That's a big question. Does council provide it? I mean, I am clearly very entertaining, but I don't think that's what anybody means. So entertainment is amusement or diversion provided especially by performers. And I think that raised questions for me of where is that provided? Who is providing it? Who is able to access that? And who pays? Who pays is always the big question in council. And as well in this, whose stories get told? That's an important part of this conversation. It's also the act of entertaining, and if you need something that's entertaining, I suggest you have a look at the council's YouTube channel. You can watch our meetings. It's terribly, terribly entertaining and free for you to watch right there. I think this question about the role of council or government, ratepayers or taxpayers in entertainment has just come up just this week in our public discourse. And some of you might have seen an interview, I think, by Newsroom with the ACT spokesperson for the arts sector. Give me a little nod if you saw that. Okay, yes. If you haven't, recommend it. A, entertaining, but B, raises some really big questions about those things I said, like who pays, why do we pay, what's the value for our community, why should we care if the political spokesperson for one of our coalition government partners has only once been to the theatre and that was in New York. Why should we care about that? Because I think we really should. And I'm going to explain to you today why that matters locally. So, what does council do? Well, what we do, we don't just get to make it up. It's determined by the Local Government Act, which gives us two main thrusts, I'm pointing, of the role, our purpose. First, to enable democratic decision-making. That's the turning on and voting on things. That's about how we structure, having awards, encouraging local body elections, going out to consult with you on various things. So that's how we do it on your behalf. But then the job we actually have to do through our plans, we have these, they're called the well-beings, the four well-beings of the Local Government Act, which is to promote the social, economic, environmental and cultural well-being of our community. Now, the Local Government Act doesn't define those things, but they are defined in other places. So we're not, again, not just making that up, but that's a very broad definition, and you can read most things into that, and most local councils read all kinds of things into it. It enables us to reflect the kinds of requests that come to us from our community and find a way to deliver on those. It's also the petard by which we get hoist when people say, "Oh, you should stick to core business, and all of these things are a nice to have." A nice to have. I am against the phrase "nice to have," because under the Local Government Act, we are required to provide for the social, economic, environment and cultural well-being of our communities. Therefore, those things cannot be nice to have. We are required to provide for them. So you might have views, and I hope you do, about what that provision might look like in our community. But the idea that we are here for roads, rubbish and recycling is a very 1984 idea. I'm just putting that one out there. The role of local government is much bigger than that. And yes, it comes at a cost. It absolutely does. And that's part of the conversation we need to have with our community. So I've mentioned already that council has vision and plans. Of course we do. Our vision up there, Iti Lahi Iti Punamu, the non-direct translation of that is small city benefits, big city ambition. I don't know if that's particularly helpful in trying to describe where we're trying to go. It means we're small enough and we're big enough at the same time. I like to take that as my own personal motto. Small enough and big enough at the same time. In a city terms, it means we're small enough for people to be connected, for people to feel safe, for people to experience community and feel like they get to have all of the benefits that this society, our community offers. It also means that we're big enough to have some of the assets and facilities of a much bigger city. And the reason we're able to be in that space is because of how Palmerston North functions as kind of a capital of the central North Island. You know, we're the big smoke for Fielding, and also for Whanganui, and a little bit for central Hawke's Bay. So we have a wider reach than just our 90,000 people of Palmerston North. That again triggers a question of, if we're servicing that wider area with our facilities and venues, is it fair that our 90,000 people bears the cost of that? And that is a really good question, and one we're trying to work through at council at the moment. Anyway, we have this vision, and then we have all of these plans that sit underneath it. I don't expect you to read that, or indeed care, because those plans really form the to-do list that officers get on with to deliver for council. We set strategic direction, and then we create these areas of interest that we test through things like long-term plan, and officers get on with. And they end up looking like that, which again, please don't try to read, but these are all on the website so you can. There's something secret here. This is our arts and heritage plan, and it starts to talk about the places that entertainment comes from. The bottom there, it talks about providing, funding and supporting city and community events as part of what we do for our arts sector. And I'll talk more about what that might look like. But here's a picture. Anybody know what that is? It's the Regent Theatre. I sometimes at council, I have a little sheet in the back of my notebook. This is a secret, please don't tell anybody. I have a little sheet in the back of my notebook where I like to do a thing like council bingo of the things that people say all the time. And one of them is jewel in the crown. And you would not believe how many jewels our crown has got in Palmerston North. Lots of things get referred to as a jewel in the crown, but none of them more consistently than the Regent on Broadway. And some of you will be aware of how close we came to losing that facility. Absolutely. It was very nearly gone, I guess. We had two facilities. We had the Opera House, which was a theatre, and the Regent, which was a cinema. And the decision was made we could only afford one, and the Opera House was chosen as that. And then as a result of community feedback and a huge fundraising campaign, that decision was changed. We decided to retain the Regent on Broadway, and that has been to the benefit of our community over the 40 years since that decision was taken. It's an absolute asset to our community. So the Regent on Broadway, and there are some other pictures on here, like the Regent. What we have there is Tamanawa, our Museum of Art, Science and Heritage at the top there, and the Globe Theatre here at the bottom. All three of those, Regent, Globe and Tamanawa, operate as council-controlled organisations. That means they're set up to run independently from council. They have their own board structure, but council controls them, which is a bit of a misnomer because we don't really control very much. We get to appoint half of their board members, and we set a statement of expectation every year for what we expect them to achieve. So how we expect them to give effect to the strategy and plans of council, how we expect them to give effect to the expectations of our community. And the three statements of expectation are quite consistent across those three organisations. You know, the Globe and the Regent particularly similarly, because they both operate as theatres for hire, effectively. But there's also a community element in that, as it can't just, we don't want it to be just travelling shows coming through, using our facility, entertaining our masses and then moving on. We also want those facilities to operate as places where our own community gets to tell their own stories. So whether that's in the shows they put on or making their spaces available for, say, rehearsal space for community groups. Or you'll see things like this week where we have massive graduation, which is happening in the Regent, and people will be parading up and down Broadway. So there are reasons for doing those things which are beyond entertainment. But sometimes, and side note, I was at the Globe last week for Women and Business. It appeared on my Facebook page. You might have seen a rather lovely photo. And I was with somebody who I see at lots of events, mostly sporting. And she said to me, "Oh, this is rather lovely." I said, "It's the Globe. Do you know, I've never been in here." "You have never been in the Globe?" She said, "Oh, no. Why would I have been here? Have you looked at their list of what's on? There is literally something for everybody." And she said, "I'm really more about sport, so I'm only here because this is an interesting person about disabled access." I was like, "But they do wrestling. It's clearly a sports venue." And she didn't know they did wrestling, or maybe that was a sport. I don't know. But I take a very broad definition, so it was in my book. But that's about, you know, who do you see in our facilities? Our facilities serve the needs of council if the widest possible expression of our community sees themselves in it, by what's on stage, by what's exhibited, by the stories that are told, and that you feel that that's a space for you. And there's work that council also does in that space by offering these facilities to make sure that they're accessible to the broadest range of our community, whether that's people who have access needs, so whether we can get wheelchairs in there, and particularly our big powered wheelchairs, whether we do performances that are accessible in terms of being quiet performances, maybe for people who have those kinds of needs, or with sign language, or whatever it might be. Council controlling those facilities means that we can require those things to be taken into account in the way that it's really difficult for a commercial provider to do that, because the bottom line is important to council, don't get me wrong, it absolutely is important, but we also have other things that are important, and access to the arts and to our events, facilities and venues is one of those things. But we don't just do CCOs to give you things to do, to entertain the masses. We have other facilities as well, which you might be familiar with, or you might not. You might be like my person at the Globe, and I've never been there. So, top left there, Square Edge, which, if you've been around a long time, you will know used to house the council chamber itself, yeah, in what is now known as the Evelyn Rawlins Room. So a really important building in terms of its heritage for our city, and again, there's a role for council in preserving our built heritage, but also really important in the way it functions as a community arts centre in providing low-cost studio space for our visual artists, and also exhibition space for artists who either have studios in the building or who have studios around the country, countryside, region, city. And they do things like our art trail, which council also funds under another heading, which I'll get to soon. But about providing those opportunities to connect the work of artists with the public who might fund that work. And council has a role in that as well. The Stomach at the top there. Anybody heard of the Stomach? Oh, you are remarkably well informed. I thought that one might trip you all up. But no, the Stomach is actually a Palmerston North icon, and that would be on my list of council bingo words, but it is rightly used in the context of the Stomach, because Stomach is 35 years old this year. It's a recording studio, rehearsal space, performance space that council established and now runs with its own board governance arrangements. Council does provide some funding for it alongside other agencies, but that was a new thing to New Zealand 35 years ago, and we've kept it going through those 35 years, through good times and bad, some ups and downs, but it's been hugely successful in engaging young people, particularly, not exclusively, with the opportunity to record, produce, attend music events. It's also a well-used rehearsal space for things like Samba Evento, which is our Brazilian drumming group. So it gets used by all kinds of different parts of the community. Keisha Birch on the left there, which is our only Grade 1 heritage listed building in Palmerston North, is also your part of the offering of council. It operates, again, primarily as a venue for hire. You can get married there or have an afternoon tea, one or the other. But it also operates as an art space and a museum. So in the coach house, there's a permanent exhibition which tells the story of that building. And if you haven't been into that, I absolutely recommend it for an afternoon wander. A, the gardens are beautiful there anyway, but B, the story of Caixa Verge is inspiring in how it was so nearly lost to our community, a bit like the Regent, I suppose, so nearly lost and saved and kept alive by the community and council being prepared to step into that space. On this far side, we have Wildbase Recovery, which I think was in my bio. I've been on the board of Wildbase since we started fundraising to build it. That was a big job. And we were just saying today in council, if we'd known then what we know now, I don't know if we'd have been that brave. But I hope you've all taken the opportunity to go and have a look through Wildbase Recovery in the Esplanade. Because that is entertaining. Certainly that in-flight aviary, you could get taken out by a TUI or two, which is maybe your idea of fun. I don't know. It's primarily an education facility and comes at it from a conservation angle, which again speaks to those well-beings. And what I'm trying to explain in all of this, I suppose, is that those well-beings aren't isolated. They would be their own, they're not even a Venn diagram, they're completely overlapping. Most things that are good for one will be good for one, two or three of the others. And the cultural well-being of the city shouldn't be separated out from those things. Actually can't be. When people say, I don't see the value in that, they've not stopped to think. And they need somebody to help them do that. Because if there's good cultural value in it, chances are there'll be economic value or social value or, where am I, environmental value in it as well. And you will probably all have experienced that in the programmes of our library, which is the one in the middle there. And I think it's fair to say there's something for everybody going on at the library, whether that's... I saw a thing came into my email yesterday where they're inviting me to come and learn to crochet. Like, I don't think... Is that a library job? But libraries are not what they used to be, are they? They operate really as community hubs, where there's an opportunity for learning. And I suppose maybe that's what a library has always been, is about learning and putting knowledge into people's hands. Historically, through the provision of books. These days, more often, through the provision of connection to ways to get that information, and that might be face-to-face learning, which I think is something we all came to value a little bit in those COVID times as well. Kanoi ki te kanoi, being face-to-face with people is incredibly valuable for our well-being. I would recommend in that space, if you're a book lover, a reader, and the library do a fabulous programme called Off the Page, which they run in collaboration with Massey University School of Creative Media. And it is absolutely wonderful. It's every Friday, not every Friday, Friday once a month. Sometimes they have special events. About 5:30 in the library, be an author talk or an interview with somebody interesting. There's generally drinks and nibbles. So it's a good night out. But all of those opportunities available through, in this case, the library, in all of these cases, because council funds it. And that's just in our venues. We also fund events. Any ideas what that one might be? Oh, man, you lot are too good. Yes, Summer Shakespeare. That is that's last year's one, I think, which was Romeo and Juliet. And you might be aware there's been some controversy around Summer Shakespeare around the country. Programmes like Summer Shakespeare, Shakespeare in particular, has been particularly hard hit by the economic crisis that we've been in. Yeah, for us here in Palmerston North, our Summer Shakespeare programme, Manual 2 Summer Shakespeare, was a collaboration with Massey University, and Massey have withdrawn their funding from that scheme. And so last year, Council stepped in to save Summer Shakespeare. It wouldn't have happened without Council finding extra funding. And we're proposing through this long-term plan that we continue to be the foundation funder for Summer Shakespeare. What that means is a commitment to fund it about a third of the cost of doing it. Putting on Summer Shakespeare, in all of its glory, costs upwards of $100,000. It's not cheap. But for comparison, New Year's Eve in the Square also costs upwards of $100,000. So that is just... It's always a terrifying thing when you start talking council numbers. I get that. The thing I say most often is these are eye-watering numbers. But this is the space that we're in, is If council can put in a third of the funding, then we can get a third of the funding in kind. Your people will contribute to maybe give a little programme and or providing services in kind, and we can go for sponsorship with some of our philanthropic supporters around the country. But without council's provision as the core funder for that, it doesn't happen. And that's council's role in the provision of that entertainment. It's about providing leadership in that space to say our community values this. And our community might value this even if they never personally go. You might say, Shakespeare is not my thing. In fact, my children do say that to me. Every time I try to make them go, oh, Mum, it's like school. Mum, oh, but you love it. You love it. It's just wonderful. It's magical. You'll be entranced. And I took them to Romeo and Juliet, and they say, we had no idea what was going on. Who was that woman in a dress? I'm like, that was the priest. They go to a Catholic school and say, that was not the priest. So I'd obviously failed there badly. But even if you don't go yourself, even if you go, I don't want to go to Shakespeare in the Park. It's cold. I'll get bitten by insects. I don't like Shakespeare. You might still feel that there's value to our community in being a place where people can go to Shakespeare in a public space that is free for everybody to be able to access. Because what the arts speak to is that aspiration for the community that we want to be. I might not experience it myself. Like many of the sporting things that council also funds, I am not planning to experience those for myself. But I absolutely see the value in being a place where we have the facilities for those to happen. Part of the biggest part of council's line-by-line expenditure is in sports playing fields, reserves, walkways. Now, I don't use those very much. I mean, I like a good walk as much as the next person. Unless the next person's Kate Louise, in which case I'd like the walk a lot more than she does. But I think it's important that we have those facilities. And that's the collectivism that council is built on. Not just what do I want, what do I need, but what makes this a great place for me to live, for my family to live, for my family to come and visit me in. What does that mean for each of us, and how do we all contribute to that, whilst also making sure we fill the potholes? Absolutely, we should fill the potholes. So, I pressed too hard. So, recreation and play comes into the provision of entertainment for council, as I've said. That's in the sports space, particularly. We support and fund for-purpose organisations and community partners to deliver some of this for council. Provide local parks and reserves, sports fields, facilities, walkways, shared pathways. So recognising that active and passive recreation is experienced in a number of ways across our community. And for some of you, that's just being able to get out and walk safely in a park at the Esplanade or on our walkways down by the river, for example. That's an important part of this provision as well. It's things like how we use our public spaces. So, I might get you with this one. Does anybody know where that is? It's across the road. Yes, it is, absolutely. It's the railway land. And I like that we still call it the railway land. It really does tell the story of that space, doesn't it? Of how the railway used to come through the centre of Palmerston North. And as a result, we have this really random amount of large open space in a space that would be much more productively used as housing, in my opinion. But that is the history of the space. It's like, I have to remember this is being recorded, shouldn't I? Saying all kinds of things that should best be remained between us. But yeah, we have to think about how we use that space. And yes, there is a really good skate park there now. There's also a basketball court. We just opened that a couple of weeks ago as part of our commitment to play spaces in the city. There is, hopefully, eventually, a commercial high ropes course going to operate in that space as well. And those are all really good entertainment options. But that's not the entire reason why council does them. There is a thing called crime prevention through environmental design, SEPTED. Drop that one into conversation over dinner sometime. But that is about how places are safer when there are people using them. And so that's how council makes spaces like the railway land, like the square to Mile Hinde. That's how we make those safe spaces for all of us to use by encouraging things to happen in those spaces. where people are, those places are more safe. It's also helpful if you have lighting as well. But that's part of the reason that we put these places in, put these facilities in places like that, is about making them a safe space to use crime prevention through environmental design, which plays back into that economic well-being, that we don't want to have to keep undoing vandalism and graffiti. And the way we can get ahead of that is by encouraging people into those spaces so those antisocial behaviours don't happen. Okay, this is my final trick to try and trip you up. I will give you half a point for Mountain Bike Park. Does anybody know the name of it? No, it isn't. You're in the right zone, though, of the city. This is Arapuki, which is just down on your way out of town. So not up to Ratia, along and out. Arapuki is a mountain bike park, which I think is one of our best-kept secrets, because the land is owned by council. We've got a long history of forestry up there, which has been one of the ways council has made some money to try and share the load rather than just charging everything to ratepayers. But in that forestry block, we've also worked with the Mountain Bike Club to develop mountain bike trails. And they have put in, they put in a lot of money, which council's also helped to, but they have put in thousands, tens of thousands of volunteer hours in developing Arapuki as a mountain bike park that I don't think will ever take on Rotorua as the peak mountain bike park, but it certainly has its fans and people travel to use it, and is developing well in that space as a partnership between council and the mountain bike club. So what's the benefit to the community of that? I'm picking most of you are not mountain bikers. I could be wrong, I don't want to judge. I am not a mountain biker, so no judgment here. But what's the benefit to you in council working in partnership to develop a mountain bike park? Well, I will tell you. It's a rhetorical question. I will tell you what the benefit is to you, and that leans back into that economic development, economic well-being. If people travel to come to our mountain bike park, then they stay in our hotels and motels. They shop in our retail providers. They go out for dinner afterwards, and they go back and they tell their friends that Palmerston North is much better than they thought it was. And then their friends come too. So even if I don't personally experience it or value it, there is a value to our community. And mountain biking is just one example of how that works. So this there is the economic development plan, which is what I've been alluding to in some of this. And the bit that I've expanded in that top corner talks about attracting major events to the city. And something I hear all the time from people is they love, through the summer, every weekend in Palmerston North, there's something going on. Yeah, whether that's Esplanade Day or Festival of Cultures, it's often in the square, there's something going on and it's usually free. And our community love that. They love it when they've got people visiting. They say, oh, today we're going with 30,000 other people to the square to go and taste the massive paella, a Festival of Cultures. But the reason we do that is not because that's a fabulous opportunity to tell the stories of the communities who now make Palmerston North home, and we are incredibly proud of those, 150 different nationalities that are represented in our city, so something like Festival of Cultures absolutely gives them an opportunity to tell their stories through performance art in whatever shape on that stage, or through their food, or through their craft. Absolutely, those are all marvellous things. But they're not the reason the council funds it. We fund it as a major event for its economic impact in the city. And there are other things that we fund in that category, like the art trail that I mentioned earlier that Square Edge looks after. It's funded for its economic impact, not its arts benefits. The other one, I could have said Rural Games, although that has its own separate funding line at the moment because it was just way too much money to come out of that fund. But all of those things that happen in the square, or the Esplanade, for the sake of Esplanade Day, are major events. And then we do things like this, PACANS, which is National Young Performers Awards, which runs at the Regent in October, which is a national event that we attracted to Palmerston North by some kind of magic. It certainly wasn't our money. It might have been the good looks and charm of the mayor. I'm going to put that one there. And they come. Now, that picture there, which you can't see really well, it looks like a hydrangea. That's actually the people who performed in 2021. Huge numbers of performers come to the city for that National Young Performers Awards. And it runs over Labour Weekend for 4 or 5 days, depending on their programme. So we fund it for its economic impact. It's a great thing for our local performing artists to be able to see, whether that's ballet or jazz or piano or speech and drama is in there. Great for our young people to see that, to have that on their doorstep, to be able to access it. Wonderful for seeing that route to success and being inspiring for our young people. That's not why we fund it. We fund it because it fills our hotels and motels and drives our retail economy. So you'd be forgiven for looking at lots of these things and going, oh, nice to have. It's not nice to have at all. Without these things, the wheels fall off our local economy. They're absolutely crucial to our aspirations for the growth and development of this city. Oh, there you go, there's Rural Games. Sometimes things get so big that they don't fit in our funding pots. We are quite frugal in this space. It might not look like it, but when you compare what Palmerston North tries to do and how much we fund it with similar-sized cities, we actually don't have a lot of money to play with, and we have to leverage what we've got. We attracted in Rural Games. We stole it from Queenstown. That was a bold move, we felt. Like, Queenstown, come to Palmerston North, we said, boldly. And they said yes. Do you know why they said yes? You probably don't. Because in Queenstown, the only people they got to their Rural Games were tourists. Yeah. About 2,000 tourists. That was their biggest number ever. In Palmerston North, we put it in the square, we don't charge for it, and 40,000 people attend. Which Rural Games think is absolutely marvellous. And it looks great when we're on the TV on the country calendar special. Gotta love that. I always have my fingers crossed for good weather so that people don't know, oh, it was much sunnier in Queenstown. But no, so far we're all good. But again, those people all have to stay somewhere. They all have to eat. They all suddenly need to buy a fridge freezer, if you believe the economic data. In the week of Rural Games, which backs into Central District Field Days, our whiteware goods sales spike. This makes no sense to me. Are these people all coming from somewhere that doesn't have a Harvey Norman? Maybe they are. I don't know. But this is the kind of the symbiotic relationships that you see, that we put at risk when we start having the arts conversation on its own. These things all hang together to tell the full story. So for the City Council, yeah, our desire is for Palmerston North to be recognised for its great quality of life, while at the same time offering the lifestyle, education and business opportunities available in much larger cities. That's our big enough, small enough proposition. We think all of these things that we've been talking about are the way that we do that. So you won't see it written down anywhere that it's Palmerston North City Council role to come out and entertain the masses. And even if you do go and watch the YouTube of council meetings, I think you'll find it isn't Palmerston North's job very effectively to entertain the masses. But the things that we do need to do, we can use that entertainment lens to deliver. And we fund it directly through rates to the venues that we own. We fund it through grants that we give organisations. So we have strategic priority grants for organisations where we fund them on a 3-year cycle to give them a chance to, you know, not be so dependent on applying for funding every year. We have particular one-off grants that community groups and individuals can apply for, which is a partnership programme with Creative New Zealand, which is the Creative Communities programme that I look after for council, where every 6 months or so we'll fund 30 different bright ideas for something that tells the stories of our community. You know, Stu, you were a member of that years ago, so you know the value of that. So there are lots of different ways that council works in this space. It might not be what we do, but it's a lot of why and how we do it. And it's really important, in my opinion. But it's not just about my opinion. It's important that you have your say. And that's what I started with at the beginning, is that we're in our long-term plan process right now. The easy catchphrase, have your say before the 9th of May. And after that, don't come moaning to me. No, that's not part of the program. Have your say before the 9th of May. There are all lots of different ways to get involved. The easiest thing to do is to have a look on the council website, and that takes you into that process. You do not need to write War and Peace on the subject. You can if you want. I won't thank you for it when I have to read 1,000 submissions. But we would really appreciate hearing from as many people as possible about what you value and why. How much that's going to cost and how that lands with you. And this is just one small section of that conversation. But genuinely, please, if you have a view on any of this, please do let us know through that process. That is me done. Bob on 5 past. And we're going to have time for you to think about questions.
Okay. Yep.